Welcome to Strategy Lab, where we talk to some of the brightest minds behind some of the biggest stories in business and politics. I'm your host, C.R. Wooters, and I'm joined as always by my friend and business partner, Adam Weiss. Adam, how are you, buddy?
I am just delightful, C.R.
Okay, tell the folks who we have on the show today.
Today we have my friend, your friend, our friend, Rena Farrell. Rena is the Chief of Staff for Public Affairs at the Business Roundtable, where she manages day-to-day operations for the Public Affairs team. She also leads the organization's overall strategy and execution on communications initiatives and oversees CEO engagement across the membership. During her time at the Roundtable, Rena has led several successful efforts and announcements on significant issues, most notably the association's updated statement on the purpose of a corporation and passage of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Prior to Business Roundtable, Rena worked for Melman Castagnetti. While with the firm, she helped clients develop winning strategies and build relationships with key policymakers in Congress, the White House, and government agencies and regulatory bodies. She got her start in D.C. working on Capitol Hill for Congressman Cedric Richmond, who is now Joe Biden's Director of Public Engagement at the White House.
Okay, let's jump into it. Here's our conversation with the BRT's Rena Farrell. Rena Farrell, welcome to Strategy Lab.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's jump right into it. So as we record this, we're a couple of weeks into the new administration. You know, how are you guys, the BRT, thinking about the Biden-Harris administration thus far? Or kind of how are you thinking about, you know, the whole world kind of changes when you switch parties in the White House? How does that make you guys adjust?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think with a new administration, with new leadership comes new opportunities for cooperation and progress. So I think we're excited about the opportunities that we have to work with the Biden-Harris White House. I think out of the gate, you know, we have a common enemy in the pandemic. And the most important thing we can do is stop the spread, save lives, and get people vaccinated and start rebuilding the economy. So we're all on the same team right now. And I think there's other opportunities that we see on infrastructure, immigration, trade. I think our CEOs are excited to work together with the new administration.
So I'll follow that up by saying, you know, in addition to the new administration, post the Georgia runoffs, now you have kind of unified Democrats across the Hill as well. Does that change anything the way you guys think about it, or kind of fits into the category of, well, there's a new administration?
You know, I think it fits into the category of a new administration. And like I said, you know, top priorities in government at all levels to be a helpful partner in the fight against the pandemic. I think, you know, I mentioned immigration, infrastructure, trade, worker training. I think a lot of opportunities, a lot of alignment. I think, you know, what happened in Georgia might change things and prospects for, you know, topics like corporate tax reform. So I do think that's an important topic for us, along with all the other things I already mentioned. And I think, you know, we're going to continue to make the case that as we rebuild the economy, it's important to keep it competitive, and a competitive tax rate is core to that.
So let's take a step back. What's it like working with the most powerful CEOs and the member companies in the world during a pandemic, you know, and the impact they can have?
So I will say it has been incredibly inspiring. So last March, when all of this was just hitting and we were starting to understand the gravity of what we were going to be dealing with as a country and in the world, the timing aligned with one of our quarterly meetings. It was virtual, of course, but the topic, of course, was COVID-19. And it was inspiring to hear these CEOs rallying of them saying, what can we do? What's our role? How can we help? So, you know, one of our CEOs was handing out his cell phone number saying, I can get a plane. Let's all donate PPE equipment and get it delivered to the places that need it the most. So it really was a lot of coordination and them just need help, but it wasn't focused just on themselves. It was really focused on small businesses and their employees and customers and keeping them safe.
Yeah. It's gotta be wild. You know, the whole world kind of shuts down and your job is to be in charge of kind of to kind of work with the biggest companies in the world. It's gotta be wild to watch them take a quick U-turn to, like, you know, figuring out how to get people PPE, and some of your member companies are helping to produce the vaccine or vaccines. How are folks feeling now as we are, you know, a year into this? Are the companies starting to hopefully see a light at the end of the tunnel, or are we not quite there yet?
Well, I think all the developments on the vaccines is great. And as you mentioned, we do have member companies, you know, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, that are helping to lead that fight. I think, you know, right now it's how can they take their skills and their resources and help with the most immediate challenge, which seems to be getting vaccines to more Americans. So you have companies like Amazon that's standing up clinics where they just vaccinated 2,000 Americans in a weekend. You have Honeywell doing something similar in North Carolina. So I think they're all coming together and saying, here's what we're good at. You know, Amazon, we move packages sure. daily. You know, we have another company that is a tech company and has a lot of call centers. And they're like, we can stand up call centers because people have a lot of questions on vaccines. And we can staff that and take questions. So I think they're all coming, again, similar to what we saw last March, where they're bringing their resources, what they're good at, their skill set, and offering to help. And that's happening on vaccines. And I think, you know, just yesterday, the administration put out an announcement, a new partnership they're having with pharmacies to distribute vaccines. And that includes three of our companies, Walmart, Walgreens, CVS. So I do think, you know, we're starting to see things improve. I think we have a long way to go. Our CEOs are really focused on educating the public on vaccines. But ultimately, you know, we know getting people vaccinated is the best way and most important thing we can do to save lives and restart the economy. So we're all in and want to be helpful.
Go ahead, Adam. What you got?
So I obviously you have a common enemy coming into this year in COVID-19. But that isn't always the case. And it's not always the case internally. So you're working with, you know, the biggest CEOs in the world. How do you find common ground on messaging, and how do you navigate conflicting messaging needs when folks aren't always aligned?
So I used the word inspiring before, but I think it applies here. One thing that was most interesting in this started, well before, but I remember Jamie Dimon in particular when he took the helm and was our chairman a few years ago. He said, you know, I'm going to lead this organization. The most important thing we can all do, and it's a call to all my fellow CEOs, is not be parochial. So check your parochial interests at the door, and we're going to work on you know, policies that will enact real change and help more Americans and increase opportunity and grow the economy. And I think the CEOs heard them. I know they did. And that has continued under Doug McMillon's leadership. So our agenda is fully set by our CEOs. So the board meets four times a year, and then we have our full membership that meets as well. And they determine, you know, what issues we're going to be out in front on and how and where and when we're going to show up. And they really have prioritized those issues that will grow the economy and create more opportunity for Americans. And I think that dovetailed well following the purpose of a corporation, where these CEOs really came out and said, you know, we want to be clear. This is how we already operate, but we're going to go on the record and lay it out more clearly and more detailed. We work for all of these different stakeholders. So I think with the stakeholders in mind, employees, customers, communities, suppliers, and shareholders, that's how they've approached our policy agenda and what issues really matter to them.
Can we stick on that for a second? Because there's been a whole bunch of push probably for the last 4 or 5 years now on corporate kind of activism and corporate social activism, basically asking corporations to weigh into stuff that relates well beyond profits. Everything from who can use a bathroom to immigration and a bunch of other things. How are you guys thinking that through now? And kind of, I know you've been out in front on that before. Is that, give us an update on that.
Yeah. So on purpose of a corporation, I think, you know, since we did that, the majority of the time we've been experiencing a global pandemic.
Yeah, it turns out you can't talk to the world changed in the meantime. Right. Exactly.
Right. Exactly. The world changed. And I think people thought, because the world changed, that what we had committed to do and what we had promised to do, and CEOs had signed on the line, was going to go out the window because we had to prioritize profits because everybody's just trying to navigate this turbulent environment. And that didn't happen. Quite the opposite. I mean, we talked about, you know, a couple inflection points, the first being, you know, COVID and how CEOs came together and decided how they were going to address that. I think the second was the killing of George Floyd. And that's, again, where an issue, I mean, they all care deeply about racial inequities and justice, but an issue where Business Roundtable as an organization, you know, somewhat typically out of our mandate, but you saw us over the summer out lobbying on policing reforms. That all of a sudden became a core issue to our CEOs because it mattered to their employees and customers, which was aligned with the purpose of a corporation. So I do think you've seen, you know, not necessarily more of an appetite, but they do know that based on, you know, the stakeholder vision, there's a lot of issues that matter to a lot of their different stakeholders, and they're prepared and ready to lead on those.
Absolutely. I wonder on these things, like if I was a CEO, like how hard this must be to manage. Now you're managing basically a workforce that's probably working from home, and you're managing in, you know, kind of turbulent social times, plus trying to figure out how to make a profit in a pandemic. They got to balance an awful lot at this point in time. I guess that's why they get paid the big bucks, right?
Those are your words.
Thinking about that, though, and knowing that you have a deep communications background and there's kind of a confluence of challenges, if not crises, where do you source your information? Like, where do you pick up your news? Where do you find your intelligence that you go and kind of arm yourself for the day or for the week or for, you know, making plans?
Well, first and foremost is this podcast.
Okay, we need to reevaluate your
priority. To be fair, there's been a bit of a gap between season one and season two, so we're a little concerned about how much intel you might have, but you know.
Exactly.
I think, you know, I read the Hill Pubs and Beltway News and Wall Street Journal, New York Times. But, you know, I think where I get most of my information is straight from the source. So a lot of it comes from our CEOs and our member companies who are so engaged. And, you know, when something's happening, they don't hesitate to reach out, make sure we're aware, take a, you know, check our pulse, see where we're going to be on an issue, provide some guidance. So I think, you know, that's where I get my personal news. But of course, just the nature of my profession, I have a lot of incoming from all angles. So I'm able to stay up to speed the best I can.
So speaking of like recent news and there's been a lot of talk recently about Robinhood and hedge funds messing with the market in the last few days. Do you guys have what's your take on that or kind of like, how do you feel like these kind of market forces are affecting decisions that your companies have to deal with? Look, hedge funds are nothing new. Short stocks are nothing new for these guys, but like, there's this whole like Robinhood world, and has that come up recently? Have you guys talked about that, or is that, you know, kind of not still
and
background?
I just add a piece to that, Rena, before you answer. Like, how do you work through like a real life kind of political brush fire, right? Like, how do you work that through with your members? How do you think about that? You know, how do you form a policy and approach? A take. I think that's something interesting as well. Beyond obviously the news is interesting, but the approach that your team takes to kind of respond.
Yeah. So CR, to answer your question, you know, we Business Roundtable has not said anything publicly on that issue. And candidly, I think there's so much going on. I mean, yesterday we worked closely with our members to put out a statement on rescue legislation. Which is really focused on, you know, providing assistance to small businesses, scaling up the vaccine effort, safely reopening schools. So I think that's right now where their priorities are, rightfully so.
Right.
Adam, to your question on how we, you know, deal with these live exercises, I think what makes Business Roundtable, you know, a great organization, if I might say so myself, is the access to the CEOs and how engaged they are. So, you know, I think we saw this most recently, probably on January 6th with the insurrection. And as that was playing out in real time, you know, we were communicating with our CEOs and very quickly worked up a statement to condemn the act and the violence that they were all supportive of. and aligned with their own personal beliefs as well. So it does, you know, we're able to be nimble because they are so involved, and really influence what we say and do. So in that way, we're really lucky as an organization.
So I'll give you, we got one or two more kind of, serious questions, and then we move on to some funny questions at the end. So Congress in kind of Washington speak is a 2-year kind of thing. And for this Congress, what's kind of your goals for this Congress? What are you hoping to get done or hoping doesn't get done? I mean, I'll save you the breath and say that we all hope that COVID gets under control. And so that's probably everybody's first priority, but kind of beyond that, what are you hoping to get done in the next 2 years here?
Well, you said it, COVID, of course. But once we get through that, how do we rebuild the economy? How do we create jobs, especially those that were lost, you know, the small businesses, the hundreds of thousands that have to close their door during this time. So I think next out of the gate, we're really going to be looking at modernizing U.S. infrastructure. And I think there's mm-hmm. a few components of that, rural broadband being one, COVID obviously exposed inequities with digital divide. And I think infrastructure is a way to invest in the economy and create jobs. So I do think that's an important priority almost immediately once we get through, this initial round of relief legislation that's desperately needed. But look at how we jumpstart the economy. From there, I think worker training and education, to increase those investments, especially as, you know, the way we work changes and has changed due to the pandemic and probably will, you know, there are lasting changes from this. And then also, I think immigration. I think our CEOs, we have a new chair of our immigration committee, Tim Cook, who's been a leader on this issue. I think they're looking for permanent solutions to DACA and comprehensive reform that's aligned with America's values. So I think there's a lot of opportunity over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I will say it's nice to talk about transportation, not as the everlasting transportation week we had for 4 years. say what you will about the Trump administration. They brought up infrastructure week about once every
that's
6
right,
weeks.
That's right.
So thinking about though, I mean, you just outlined a pretty aggressive policy agenda. And you've got a lot of giant megaphones, right? Like all these CEOs have their own presence, their own ability to kind of amplify messages. How do you sequence and triage kind of how you want to communicate, how BRT wants to communicate, how you want to leverage your CEOs to communicate? How do you think through each of the, you know, we're existing in a world where there's just so much has to get done all at once. How do you think through kind of the competing challenges of that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's a hard one to answer. I mean, I think, you know, as a communicator, and I think you both can attest to this too, that's what makes the job so challenging, is the country's, you know, is facing a lot of issues. There's a lot of challenges and there's a lot of opportunity, but how do you prioritize? I think in a lot of ways to walk and chew gum at the same time. And I think that's kind of how we think about our messaging. I think, you know, if we look at an issue like racial equity and justice, which is one I just left off the list, but is really important and something we're going to continue to work on. There's definitely business action that we can do on our own, that we don't need to partner with government on, that we can make changes.
Sure.
So I think that's, you know, activity that can be done regardless of what's happening on the Hill. And then of course, as part of that agenda there's real legislation and changes that need to happen. I already mentioned policing legislation, policing reforms. And I think, you know, it's hard to prioritize one subject over the other. So I think we will do our best to see where there's opportunity, where there's momentum, where it makes sense to really speak into a moment and you know, work with government leaders at all levels. Especially where there's momentum, I think on infrastructure and focusing on the economy, I think we'll start there. But there's so many important issues, I think. You know, reestablishing ourselves, you know, global leader in trade and having a clear set of rules. Climate, of course, is another important one. Competitive tax code. So there's going to be a lot to do and say. So I guess that takes me back to my original point. It's a challenging question to answer. We just try to balance all the priorities and make progress where we can.
So before we go to Adam's questions, you mentioned there are things that the companies can do on their own that they don't need government for. One thing I just was wondering if there are conversations about. So everybody's gone virtual. Are companies thinking a little differently about things like paid family leave and just like internal policy stuff? Because it's now proven that people can, or a big chunk of people can do some work from not being in the building. Do you think that will be something that kind of maybe comes out of this in a way that people start to think a little bit differently about how employees work? Obviously, look, if you work in a factory, you got to be there. If you work in a warehouse and stuff needs to be moved, you got to be there. But it seems like there's a huge chunk of the economy that has figured out some way to keep working. And I wonder, do you think the CEOs will start to kind of readjust a little bit, how they think about that?
I think that's a good question. And I think so. And I think we've already seen that, you know, just during this challenging time, them trying to increase flexibility for their workers. I don't know the exact program, but I know Bank of America set up a fund for childcare, expanded their paid family leave policy to just try to adapt to the challenges that we're all facing right now. So I think a lot of companies have done that. And I think moving forward, you know, when we're able to achieve some degree of normalcy again, I think some of those policies will stay in place.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, so here we go. We go from the very important to Adam, at the end of all these podcasts, asks a couple questions that generally have nothing to do with anything we just talked about. So fire away,
I don't
Adam.
Think that they're not important. I think they're extremely important.
No, they're very important. In fact, they're on every podcast. That's how important they are.
So I appreciate that, CR. Thank you. Rena, if you could be paid for a year to do anything, what would you choose to do?
Paid for a year to do anything. Mm-hmm. Do I have to be working in some regard, or can I be paid to lay on a beach?
You could be paid, be thoughtful about this. Like, would you want to lay on a beach for a full year?
How much flexibility do I have with the job requirements? Can I toggle between the beach and the tiki bar?
We've had a number of communicators on here. We haven't done this in a little while. So I've forgotten that I should preface. You have to accept the premise of the question. Like you cannot avoid the premise of the question.
Paid for a year to do anything. You know, I think after this challenging time being, working from home with a small baby, I think I'm going to take the beach and tiki bar.
Yeah, that's fine. That's a totally perfectly fine answer.
I'm amazed by the number of responses we get on this. And frankly, there aren't a ton of people that say beach and tiki bar, and it boggles my mind that they don't say that.
Good.
So many people are like, I wish I had this job and did this other thing. And both of us are like,
no,
what?
I wish I had some rest and relaxation.
Like, I'm going to be a ski bum for a year. Like, that's what I would do, right? Like, if you had a time machine, what is your best 30 seconds of advice to your early 20s self?
I think you can, don't be afraid to disagree. But don't be disagreeable.
That's pretty good.
That really good. I think I lifted that from somewhere. Yeah. So
yeah, I don't know, but you get full credit.
That's really solid. I'll be honest with you. I think that's something CR and I could really work on. It's helpful advice. Rena, I want to flag it's a podcast. So your vigorous nodding is not actually what people can see, but
vigorously.
I'm going to note that you are vigorously nodding on CR and I needing to disagree without being disagreeable.
Take that advice.
I also feel like I'm in the home section of TJ Maxx a little bit right now.
Home goods.
You know, like that should be on some board or something, you know?
Okay, so because we're all fantasizing about life after COVID-19, I'm asking this question because I like it for my own mental index. What is your favorite restaurant? Where is it? And what do I order?
Extra credit if it's in Potter County.
Oh, maybe I should just choose one from Potter County.
I'll give you some flexibility. You can pick one from Potter County. You can pick one from the DC Metro. You can pick one from Chapel Hill. You can pick one from any place you've lived for more than a year.
This is really hard because there's a lot of good Potter County food that you've never heard of.
While she's thinking, I'll let our listeners know that we're making reference to Potter County, which is in Pennsylvania, which is where Raina is from, which, as far as I can tell, is in the middle of nowhere.
We're also referencing Chapel Hill, which is where Raina went to college. And I think, Sierra, I could be wrong about this, but I think that in Potter County, she solidified herself as an all-state basketball player. I could be wrong about that, but I feel like that's something that happened.
Yeah, you better come up with an answer. We're going to start talking about your high school career.
I don't mind if you stay on the subject. It's very flattering.
What I understand is that she scored at least 500 points over the course of her
high
school
career. It was more than 500 points.
How many points was it?
1,213.
The best part about this is I don't know what I got. I don't remember what I got on my SATs, but Raina 100% knows to the point how many points she had in high school.
Of course I do. Double checking the math the whole time. Make sure they didn't short me a point or two.
All right, give us a restaurant, Raina.
Okay, Mirna's. And this is not interesting at all, but it's a small little diner, and they make the best greasy cheeseburger.
That's a pretty good answer. That's good. Where is it?
It's outside of Potter County. It's McKean.
Oh no!
I don't want to turn my back on Potter County, but it's so close. It's right next door. It's basically the same place, but it's in a small little town called Crosby.
Awesome. Nice.
Well, I will say we've been asking this question for, I mean, Adam, can you believe we've been asking that same question for like a year now? This is crazy. I do want to just say real quick, thanks a lot for doing this. We appreciate it. You know, I'm interested to see how your CEOs reckon with both getting this vaccine out and getting the economy rolling again, and what we look like on the back end of this. And obviously you're super busy, so we appreciate, you know, your time and spending some time with us, making fun of your high school basketball career.
Well, thank you both for taking the time. And I think, you know, it would be important for your listeners to know that one of my first jobs in DC was, I worked as CR's assistant. So humble beginnings.
This part is getting cut out.
It just goes to show that in spite of that, you too can be successful in Washington, D.C.
Exactly.
By the way, I was waiting for the early 20s self thing to be like, do not take the job working with CR.
No, it was one of my best decisions.
Well, Raina, we appreciate it. Thanks for joining us on Strategy Lab. And we will visit Potter County, even though you want to shout out counties next to Potter County, but whatever.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, Adam, what do you think? I mean, we both love Raina, but it is interesting to me. My first kind of takeaway is, boy, CEOs are trying to figure out how to get the economy rolling, how to get vaccines out, how to, like, I don't know, if you signed up to be the CEO of Fortune 500 company X, I'm not sure you thought you'd ever have to deal with vaccine distribution or something like that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I, the big takeaway for me is as she ticked off all of the competing challenges and giant, like, it wasn't like she name checked anything where you're like, oh, like that one's kind of a small issue, like racial equity and justice and climate, right? Like these are,
and immigration,
they're all existential issues that CEOs are wrestling with, that all of us are wrestling with. And I think, you know, the communicating on it, the leading on it is really challenging. And so I thought that was a really interesting kind of piece of it, that, you know, as she's name checking these issues, she's like, oh, and I forgot to mention this giant issue, right? That, like, they are hyper engaged on. And so I thought that was a pretty fascinating part of the conversation.
I also do think, you know, I heard her say, infrastructure a bunch, and I continue to believe we got to get COVID under control for sure, and that's the White House and Congress's priority 1 through 6 or whatever. But I do think infrastructure is a place where Joe Biden can actually be Joe Biden, where he can be the deal making guy at some point in time. I think that's kind of sets up perfectly for him to be the really naturally what he is, which is, you know, kind of, you know, how can we make everybody, you know, a little bit happy, and how can we move this forward? And so again, that's maybe my two cents, but it feels to me like he'll have partners at the BRT if he tries.
I think that's right. And I think, look, much like a crisis doesn't build character, it reveals it, right? Like the challenges in the infrastructure kind of components, whether it's rural broadband or, you know, the disparate outcomes for different communities have really been revealed yep. during this crisis. And I think it's interconnected, right? Like how do we recover from COVID-19 and build? And I think BRT is very focused on, okay, like we knew these issues were structural and challenging for a long time. And now's the time to solve for them because they're even starker relief than they were before.
Yeah. I also think I asked her about this and I am very interested in it. Like, what does work look like for folks after this is over? Do companies care? I just am thinking about little things like commuting and stuff. Do people care if you're in the office at 7:30 or can you be in the office at 9 o'clock after you drop your kids off and stuff now? And is there some, do companies go back and say, hey, it's been a bumpy road. We need all hands on deck and everybody's got to be here all the time now because we got to try to go build back the economy. I'm that's more for me, like kind of curious. I'm fascinated as to how that goes. But she's great. She's our pal. It was great to have her on. You got any other takes before we wrap this sucker up?
No, I'm just curious, CR, where people can find you.
Well, you can find me on Twitter until I am banned at CR Wooters. I'm kidding about the banned part, but I'm at CR Wooters on Twitter.
I am at Weiss.
And where can they find you, buddy?
I thought I was going to sell myself, so I appreciate
Sorry.
It.
No, let me try that again. Where can they find you, pal?
You can find me at Weiss Thinking on Twitter. And admittedly, I'm learning this new Clubhouse thing, so we'll see how that plays out. But don't find me quite.
What's
it's
that?
A new. So we'll talk about it offline. It's a whole new social media platform.
I can't. I'm still on MySpace.
Friendster.
Okay. Friendster. All right. Well, until next time, thanks a lot for joining us here on Strategy Lab. We'll catch you later.